telling us that CBDCs are more convenient, they're like crypto, but safer. And the truth is, I don't see the point of convenience. Like, what are you telling me? What's going to be more convenient for me than just taking my phone and tapping it, you know, to pay for a POS? So there is no more convenience. I will have to get probably another app that's going to be my digital euro wallet or whatever that is. I will have to get a trust, you know, to other companies that actually created the wallets, or that they're running them safely, that there's not going to be a data breach, anything. Then I'm going to have to understand how it's going to interact with my actual bank account, how it's going to interact with my salary or my incomes. So I don't see more convenience for me. I just don't buy it.
Hello guys, welcome once again to the last episode of the year 2025 of Bit Corner Podcast. I just want to wish you a Merry Christmas and rest and spend time with your loved ones. You deserve this. This year was an amazing year in the podcast, but not just in the podcast, but for all of Bitcoiners. We keep building, and little by little, we have been showing to the world that we have an alternative to our future. So keep building, keep stacking, keep doing what you do, because every single thing that we do as individual contributes to make a better world. So anyways, guys, this is the last episode of the year, and actually is the episode 99 of the podcast. So good way to finish the year, and I'm just happy to share with all of you. Anyways, I don't want to extend any longer, because today we have a very exciting episode to finish the year. And I want to welcome Kristina Mazankova, which is the head of PR of Bitcoin Inc. But not just that, she's also making the first Bitcoin master degree in Spain. So it will be a very interesting topic. We are going to talk about that, but also about CBDCs and Bitcoin adoption in Europe. So again, Merry Christmas and enjoy the episode, and see you next year.
Well, I always like to start the podcast if you can share a little bit more about your background, and then we'll start, you know, the Bitcoin rabbit hole journey, and then we go to the topic. But for people that probably is seeing you for the first time, if you can share a little bit about you.
Sure. I'm born and raised, and I lived most of my life in Czech Republic. So I'm from the breed of Czech Bitcoiners. I started to work in PR some, you know, 15 years ago, specifically focusing on tech companies and tech PR. PR is basically a very specific job for making external communication with media, influencers, and social media. And the tech specifically for me was interesting, because I wanted to work in companies where I can communicate very directly and very straightforward. So that was my reason for focusing on tech. And then I moved from agency sides to corporate sides. I worked mostly with like middle size companies, some startups, some companies that were at the beginning of becoming corporations. And then 19, I found this interesting position that I applied for in Satoshi Labs. And I worked for Trezor as a PR person for 2 years.
Czech company, by the way.
Yes, right. It's a funny story. Trezor actually means safe, caja fuerte. So that's a Czech word.
Okay.
And it has actually meaning. So it's not Trezor, it's not treasure, it's a Trezor. That's how
it's Okay, good
it.
To know. Wow, I learned something today.
Yeah. And then from Trezor, I moved to BTC Inc., working mainly on the conferences, but there are also other brands. So you as a contact on my media list, probably receiving all sorts of, PRs and press releases and information from me. And I've been working on the conference since 2022, so for some 3 years. And yeah, I started to teach at Hesperides University this year. I'm teaching communications in the Master in Bitcoin in Spanish because I live in Spain. And yeah, we are kicking off the new master degree in April in English. It will be online, so it's, you know, open to anybody globally who is curious about Bitcoin or who has some knowledge of Bitcoin and just is looking for, you know, joining this academic community and wants to participate in this program.
Yeah, bunch of questions about that, but I'm gonna ask you in the right moment. But I always ask, do you remind if you had like the aha moment, or you had like a process learning of Bitcoin? What gets you the most while you were learning about it?
Well, just in my mind, I have one specific friend that was, you know, talking about Bitcoin constantly. And I was like, yeah, it sounds interesting, but like lots of learning, lots of like digging into technicalities. And it always was interesting. And I was seeing how you got, you know, completely down the rabbit hole and was constantly talking about mining. He was mining at home. And we were thinking like, maybe he's a little bit crazy, you know.
Like all Bitcoiners.
Like all Bitcoiners. And then the aha moment, basically, I was orange-pilled by the founders of Trezor. They are just amazing people who had, you know, the best ideas in the community. I was orange-pilled by them. And it kind of all came together for me because when I was originally studying economics, international relations, and journalism, mm-hmm. and I was participating in Libertarian Institute in Czech Republic and during high school and doing summer camps. And so for me, I was always libertarian, economically speaking.
Yeah.
I was focusing on technologies. For me, it's easier, I would say, to understand some of the technicalities of Bitcoin. I'm not, you know, technical person. I'm not programmer. I'm not cryptographer. My job is not to understand or detail technical parts of the Bitcoin. More like translate the implication to general public. That's what PR does, right? So it made kind of sense. Like my life philosophy and my previous knowledge and working with the Czech companies that were trying to break through globally, it all came down to Trezor and was an amazing experience. And obviously, the fun part of learning the community, which is one of the most brutal communities I've ever encountered.
I can figure about that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, yeah, talking about brutal question, actually, let's talk a little bit about that, because from my perspective, you know, Europe often it's like presented itself as progressive and open and innovative, which is kind of true in some ways, but yet is despitely like hostile. That's my perspective to Bitcoin. So, but I don't know how you see it. Like, how is Bitcoin rapid in Europe media in general? What can you tell us about this?
You know, working on the conferences on many continents, it gives you a really global perspective for mm-hmm. Bitcoin and like the use of Bitcoin in different continents. So I just came back last week from Abu Dhabi conference, not Bitcoin Mina. In summer, we had a conference in Hong Kong. In November, we had a conference in Amsterdam. And in May, in Las Vegas. It's completely different audience in each of these conferences. Different use cases for Bitcoin, different motivations for Bitcoin, different people that are looking into getting involved in Bitcoin. And so this perspective is kind of interesting for me because coming from Europe, I can see how, for example, in American politics, clearly you're a traditional, you know, right or left, and that basically says whether you are pro immigration or against immigration, pro Bitcoin and cryptos or against it. If you are pro green energies or against, it's kind of very well formed, and there's not many in betweens. In Europe, I would say what's interesting is that the spectrum is much wider. politically. It's more of a spectrum that like two sides. And also, I think the ethos around Bitcoin in Europe is very much formed against around cyberpunks and crypto anarchists. And anarchism is something that is traditionally left-leaning rather than right-leaning. And you could assume that European Bitcoiners are more likely seeking for general freedoms. Yeah. So, and those freedoms are in everything, whenever it's your sexual orientation, or is your religion, or is your political inclinations. It's more like you do you, I do me approach, and you don't mingle into my things and I don't into yours. So I think, interestingly enough, I would say European Bitcoiners are more freedom spirits and more focusing on literally what Bitcoin should do and give you the freedom of living your life as you wish. Okay. Whether the governments in Europe, yeah, even no, though... Yeah. Portraying yeah. themselves as a left leaning, it's about the massive control of everything. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not surprising coming from a communist country. I can tell you that it's disguised behind being the morally higher person when you are on the left side of the spectrum. On the other hand, you need to look for signs of manipulations and control, which there are many in terms of left-leaning governments.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's why I think like the types of the programs that or the master that you're doing in Bitcoin is so important to start teaching about, that you have like another alternative tool that doesn't control the population somehow, that you have a peer-to-peer actually a system in order to provide an option, because that's the thing that I think the most powerful thing that happened in El Salvador in the Bitcoin adoption, let's say, is that people had a choice. For example, one of the main things that we had is that people didn't have access to bank accounts, because besides the story of El Salvador, it was dangerous and everything. The infrastructure is not quite well. We are a country that is currently now building a lot and it's actually developing for the first time. But that's why people didn't have access to bank accounts. Therefore, they didn't have access to have their own savings or, you know, make transactions, whatever, right? So, but having the possibility to don't loan any wallet and start using Bitcoin, that made them powerful in the sense that they have a choice in order to start having savings or do their own businesses or transactions without depending on a third party, right? I think that's one of the things that are more powerful. But also, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that interesting is like I work with many people that, for example, focus on Africa, and they say, you know, when you actually don't have an access to financial system, you are excluded, and you are, you know, maybe in a country where the government is corrupt beyond any means, and basically the inflation is skyrocketing for decades. You like, if you tell these people about Bitcoin, they're like immediately getting it. They're like immediately understanding, okay, they don't need the technical details or all the convincing that we are not killing the planet or other reasons, because it actually solves the real, very real daily problem for them. And I think a little bit similar, lots of people ask me, being from Czech Republic, why there's so many companies in Czech Republic, why there's such a community around Bitcoin of builders in Czech Republic. And one of the reasons I think is that, you know, we've been through occupation, basically, by Russia. We were under very strict, you know, socialist regime. Even before that, we had, you know, Germany coming in and taking the land and the properties and controlling everything. Like, we were not able to use Czech language. Czech books were burned. The culture was very much wiped out. So what we learned, like, as a nation in Czech Republic is anything can be taken away from you. And we learned to duck and survive. And I think that the use case for Bitcoin very often in Czech Republic is wherever comes, you know, another army, another nation that wants to, you know, just occupy our land and take anything that we have, or a regime that just basically takes your property and says, no, it's going to be property of everybody. This is a property that you cannot take.
Yeah.
So that's very powerful for a nation like Czechs, that you know, been robbed of their generational wealth over and over.
Yeah. Do you think that, I was just thinking, like, do you think that Bitcoin, let's say for policymakers, let's say in Europe, because we're talking about euros, is more dangerous to them because of actually what Bitcoin is, or what, because what actually reveals, because once you learn what it's, you know, like, let's say, Austrian economics and everything that the core values of Bitcoins involves, it's like, for us that are Bitcoiners, there's no going back, right? Because we're in a rabbit hole that opens thousands of rabbit holes.
Obviously, governments want to control their money. That's their main means of control, like taxation, like printing money, all around that. So from that point of view, it presents a threat to them, because they feel like they don't have a control over Bitcoin, or that if they regulate it more and more, they will gain the control over Bitcoin. The truth is, and it's interesting to see that once the politicians realize that people actually vote with their wallets and Bitcoin is what they want, they can actually gain. And instead of making it a threat, they can make it their power. I don't think there is a very effective future without governments. I just hope that the future is more free and more fair to every person and their freedom. So I would say what we need to demonstrate is that overtaxing or overregulating Bitcoin is going to drive people away. The same way as, you know, if you tax wealthy individuals, they will just go away from the country. And with them, they will take the jobs and they will take the their, you know, annual tax contributions. So I think just government need to realize this is just another asset that people want to use freely, and you know, make conditions and, you know, fair conditions on the market for everybody to use.
Yeah, actually, when you design like a Bitcoin master program, that's what you did. Where do you even start? Because it's so complex, and we all come from different contexts, let's say. So where do you even start in the case of the one that you're starting to do?
You know, the ambition of the master degree is not for you to get, like, you know, read all the books that have been written about Bitcoin and get like exact formation or, like, you know, knowledge of the Bitcoin. It's more of being participating in academic space where you can actually discuss your ideas or your different experiences or your different values. And it's inviting people to do it under, you know, open, free, private university instead of on X or YouTube. So it should be creating a framework where people actually engage on this topic scientifically, or at least in the academic space.
How do you avoid, like, you know, ideology is like price obsession, because most people enter because of the price, or even crypto.
So this degree is about Bitcoin only. I often say I don't understand crypto. I don't study it. I don't know about it. So maybe there are other use cases for different coins or different projects. For me, I focus on Bitcoin. This degree is focusing on Bitcoin. We will probably touch some of the topics, like what's the difference between, like, what's differentiating Bitcoin from the rest of the cryptocurrencies. We will probably touch topics like stable coins and other stuff, but it's focusing mainly on Bitcoin. So we'll be discussing economics, philosophy, legal frameworks, you know, accounting, financial, investing, node running, mining, open source projects, communications, marketing, and all of the aspects. The idea is for people that are interested in this space, they can get a peek into each of these topics and maybe, you know, start building their own projects or start working for a company that needs, you know, professionals with a Bitcoin knowledge. There's lots of companies, non-endemic companies, that are now, you know, starting to realize, oh, maybe we should do something about Bitcoin, or maybe Bitcoin could be beneficial for us. And so they need people that are still professionals in different subjects, like accountants, like marketing people, like different project managers, but they actually understand Bitcoin. So this is also like a great spot where to start if you're a professional, you're looking into start working in the industry to get like real understanding of Bitcoin. And then obviously there's a opportunity for people to become a part of the community around the Hesperides University and look for maybe more academical depth to these topics.
Do you think that it's actually like an opportunity to work in this space, first in Europe and then in Spain? Because again, as I told you, my perspective here is that there's a lot of anti-Bitcoin here in Spain. And in Europe, it's kind of, as you said, like a mix, depending where they are. For example, Portugal, they are super pro-Bitcoin, also Amsterdam and some others, right? So it depends.
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría.
This podcast is brought to you by Bull Bitcoin, the most trusted Bitcoin-only exchange built by Bitcoiners or Bitcoiners who give a damn about sovereignty, not altcoins, no custody, just pure Bitcoin straight to your wallet. Get your own virtual event so banks can't spy on your Bitcoin activity. Buy Bitcoin instantly or send bank transfer to Canada, Europe, Mexico, and Argentina in a snap for pennies. Ditch the banks, screw the shady remittances apps. Head to boldbitcoin.com, use the code BitCornerPodcast, and start stacking sats in the right way, or send money home cheap and fast. Bold Bitcoin. Own your money, destroy fiat.
You know, in Amsterdam, I was in a panel on how to find a job in Bitcoin. I'm not the HR, so I don't hire people very regularly, but I can see from, you know, my colleagues and people around me, there's so many open jobs for, you know, Bitcoin jobs. Like you can go to Bitvocation, you know, and look for a job in basically any field. It's not just technical fields. So I would say it's growing constantly, and the future looks like it's going to be growing even more. There are new and new projects that are built on Bitcoin. There are new companies. The companies that are, you know, OGs in the space are growing. So there's definitely lots of job opportunities. Now, if you ask me in Europe specifically, I would say a Bitcoin industry is very global. Lots of the companies are actually looking for remote workers because they need to cover, you know, the whole globe. So I would say in Europe is the same as anywhere else, probably. When it comes to regulations, you know, if you have an employer or you are freelancing for somebody, you know, there's that. You have a contract and you just basically do work for a company from somewhere else. So I would say it's not that difficult. Yeah.
Okay. And another thing that I want to ask is like, if you showcase things like, the case of El Salvador that we had Bitcoin, we adopted Bitcoin as a legal tender, not anymore, but still using it, or Bitcoin in Africa. I don't know. I'm just curious about the topics that you discussed with her.
You know, the degree is very practical. So we mm-hmm. have, you know, professors or like teachers from all walks of life, and they're from the industry. That's also a reason why the, you know, we do this in a private university as the university degree instead of like state degree. Don't want to get into the details. But that basically allows us to have professors from the practical life and not formed in traditional universities. For industry like Bitcoin, it's very important because there is not so many academic workers that actually can teach how to run a node or how, you know, what's Bitcoin mining in practice. Some of the experts work globally or they have different specific experiences, but most of them can speak to subject matter in different countries, continents, and definitely it's very practically focused, apart from more theoretically focused subjects like economics or philosophy or geopolitics, for example.
Okay, got it. Christina, we're in the middle of the podcast, actually a little bit more of the middle. And as the audience knows, in the middle of the podcast, we had this game that I told you, and the audience knows that my previous guest had a question for my next guest. So these questions, it doesn't come from me, come from my previous guest.
Okay.
And you will have the chance also to make the question for my next guest that we don't say who it is. They will discover in the next episode.
Let's see. So, is it going to be in Spanish?
The question, yes, is going to be in Spanish.
Let's test my Spanish.
All right, let's go. So my previous guest, guys, as I told you at the beginning of the podcast, was Napoleon Osorio, better known in El Salvador as BitDriver. So he has a question for Christina.
Europa está a punto de, según la percepción o según lo que uno escucha, está a punto de caer en algo que es un experimento mundial. No quiero ahondar tanto en qué. ¿Qué oportunidad tiene España en específico o cualquier otro lugar de Europa para poder salir del hoyo al que se está aproximando? ¿Qué se puede hacer? ¿Qué tendría que hacer para no caer en esa manipulación total a la que ya se está encontrando?
For my understanding, probably he's talking about CBDCs, kind of related to that.
My favorite topic.
So yeah, that's what I understood.
Okay. Look, I am a person that is strongly believing of not making threats in communications. As a tactic, I think fear is a strong emotion, but it's not the long-lasting one. So if you're trying to sell something or communicate something, I think fear is easier at the first, but it's long-term, not a great strategy. So I would say I have a big hopes that in Europe we went through such a transformative times, and we have a history of, you know, in Czech Republic throwing the governments out of the window of the parliament. You know, France goes into strikes every couple weeks, and they, you know, invented guillotines and so on and so on. So we do have a history of actually people, when they say enough, taking control into their hands. And I would say we don't need to be aggressive. We don't need to be violent, but we need to put our foot down and say we don't want more control. We don't want to hand over control over all of our aspects of our lives to, you know, unelected officials in the Central European Bank or any other bank. So CBDC for me, and that's what I've been, you know, communicating clearly, is a product that is artificially created on trying to solve something that doesn't need to be solved. They're telling us that CBDCs are more convenient, they're like crypto, but safer. And the truth is, I don't see the point of convenience. Like, what are you telling me? What's going to be more convenient for me than just taking my phone and tapping it, you know, to pay for a POS? So there is no more convenience. I will have to get probably another app that's going to be my digital euro wallet or whatever that is. I will have to get a trust, you know, to other companies that actually created the wallets, or that they're running them safely, that there is not going to be a data breach, anything, then I'm going to have to understand how it's going to interact with my actual bank account, how it's going to interact with my salary or my incomes. So I don't see more convenience for me. I just don't buy it. And I think lots of Europeans don't buy it. They just don't understand why they should all of a sudden get this. So they will have to come up with new set of talking points to try to sell us on it. And they're running out of options. Like, what they're going to sell you. So we're going to see how much you earn immediately. We're going to be able to, you know, expire the money so you cannot save. We'll be capable of extracting the taxes directly from your wallet. We'll be able to not give you the benefit of doubt. We'll be able to control how much of what you buy and when. So, you know, extreme examples, like you have the option now to pay for your CO2 consumption when you fly somewhere. So that's amazing to me. So now I am going to buy a flight ticket with my digital euro, and it's going to tell me, well, Christina, you flew already 4 times this year. Unless you have a very specific and important reason, you cannot go on a plane anymore. So that's the extreme examples that I am not willing to just overlook. And I think lots of people see it naturally, like Homo economicus really exists in every of us. You don't need an economical degree to understand how it's going to affect you. So I have a really big hope in, you know, the more the European CBDCs is being pushed to us, the more pushback there's going to be, because people just don't see the convenience that they are trying to sell us. There is no convenience. Like,
That the convenience is actually the most powerful narrative, like a weapon of control for the people, right? Seems like
I think that the convenience is a, you know, beautiful wrapping paper that is around disguising what is inside of the package. And it's very difficult to sell nowadays a product that actually does something. So if you are trying to sell a product that doesn't do anything for you, it's going to be very difficult. By selling, I understand that they can push it on us, but they also need some political power. And they're not in the situation right now in Europe where they would have lots of people, you know, satisfied and clapping for them. So I'm more positive.
Yeah. But what do you think actually that it could be the solution here in Europe? Because, you know, Salvador, again, we made Bitcoin a legal tender. We made a transaction in the US. They actually using it. Companies are using it in treasury, but also in the government. So what do you think that it will actually be the best solution here in Europe?
Europe is more diverse than US and than Africa or Latin America, maybe not that much. Europe, I think in each country is a little bit different, and people just need to understand that they need to fight for their freedom every day. It's not just like now we don't have a war, so we don't need to fight. And fight with your votes. Fight with your votes and make sure that you are not participating in something that is stripping away your freedoms. It's sometimes difficult to find somebody to vote for, but not voting is also a vote.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this because I saw a tweet when you guys see it, probably it has been 1 or 2 weeks, but I think it was this week or yesterday or so that Elon likes to, he's a showman, but sometimes he says something that actually makes sense, at least for me in this case, that says that European Union should be dissolved or something like that. And I get why he's saying it, but actually, if I think about it, it will make sense if you want to put it on Bitcoin way, because I think, as you said, every European company has their own context. And one thing that I learned studying engineering is that I needed to learn a lot about regulations, and I feel like a policymaker sometimes, or like a lawyer, you know, because you need to learn like the laws or regulation of Europe, but then of the Spain, but then of Catalonia, in Catalonia, and then the city that I live. It's very complex in the sense that I feel that not every European country is even economically, socioeconomically speaking, right? So it's very complex in that way.
You know, the unity of Europe is very young, I would say. European Union, with the long history of Europe, it's relatively young. So the I'm not a big fan of centralized systems, and I'm not happy with how Europe works. But on the other hand, facing the competition from US and from China and from Russia and from all of these big, you know, gigantic countries, for Europe is beneficial to be united. And so I would like to still see some form of unity. And, you know, ideally that unity wouldn't be based on control and centralization of decisions. It would be more cultural unity, and monetary unity is probably not working right now for many of the countries. So Czech Republic actually hasn't accepted the euro yet. And it's interesting, like maybe if they start, you know, instead of euro using Bitcoin, that would help.
Yeah, absolutely. It will actually help.
Yeah, so let's actually be more optimistic, even though I have to be laughing about even saying that out loud. But yeah, that would be a great solution.
Yeah, and again, it's so complex because even I remind when I started the podcast, it's not the way that I see Bitcoin is not the way that I saw it like 2 years ago. And of course, this is because of the guests that I had and the research and the experience, right? In the end, I pivot. Now I see it more like when I teach my colleagues and friends or friends of friends about Bitcoin, I teach them more like an electronic cash system, you know, not like the coin. It's more like, no, listen, this is a system where we use it, and it happens that we have a monetary, well, I don't like to say coin, but the Bitcoin that is actually work on this system. That's why we use it. So yeah, and then happens a lot of rabbit holes. I don't know. At least in El Salvador, a lot of people have a perspective that it fails. I don't think that it fails because in the end, we're still using it. And that's why this podcast exists and a lot of Bitcoin efforts are out there, like Mi Primer Bitcoin, you know, and Node Nation and Kubo Plus, and I can mention all of them. But in the end, again, what I think is the most powerful thing that Bitcoin gave to my country is just to have a choice. And thank God that Bukele, because Bukele could easily have done his own coin or CBDC, you know, but he opted for mm-hmm. Bitcoin. So I think that's a good choice, not just for us, but to anyone that want to improve their lives. And I hope that Europe, as the way that US is seeing it, that the country it's going forward because of this and another external factors, that they can replicate that. That's why I was so interested in this program that you're doing, because I was like, wow, in Europe that it's so complicated in the regulation, it's good that you're first having a Bitcoin program and start teaching mm-hmm. to other people about this. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think I was actually surprised that there is no other like Bitcoin specific degree in any university in the world. Like there's lots of blockchains and lots of Web3s and lots of
mm-hmm.
crypto and maybe not even that, like mostly it's like a blockchain or disguised something mm-hmm. something like that. But I was surprised there is not one that would be specifically focused on Bitcoin. Kind of makes sense. It's a niche and it's probably very complicated to, you know, get grants from centralized ministries or whatever, education probably in most cases. So I think it's actually quite difficult to have a Bitcoin focused degree. And then if you're launching that, you definitely need to be like Bitcoiner and know other Bitcoiners, because you need to know like who people are in the space and what their experiences can bring to the tables.
Yeah, well, and actually that hopefully it can replicate, because it will be amazing to see these programs replicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And like inter-university cooperations and research groups and everything around that would be amazing. But let's take it, you know, slow.
Yeah, one step at a time. I know that's actually what they're doing in El Salvador. You know, there are very specific programs for each, let's say in the schools for kids, then for teenagers, then for people that are going to the university. So yeah, I know Rome wasn't built in a day, but yeah.
Yeah. And also you probably want to have, you know, first, you know, a good financial understanding, like what actually money is. And then I don't mean like property of the money, but like today's world money, how it works, what it does, and build on you know, on these topics rather than starting fresh, explaining people what money is and how it works.
Do you think that's something that I was thinking? Do you think that actually in Europe is more difficult, let's say difficult, to understand Bitcoin because somehow Europe, it's very spoiled of the European Central Bank, because it's the sense that there's no hyperinflation, or you know, there's not issues economically.
Not speaking. Yet.
There are, but yeah, exactly. Yeah, not yet. Exactly.
Not yet. I would say certain part of Europe understand Bitcoin better, certain don't. You know, there are countries that are very traditionally socially oriented, like the Nordic countries, where you know, for survival, for centuries, they had to be more like, let's bring all of our food together to survive the winter, and then you do this, I do that. And so it's a bit more culturally built on socialism or like a more like community living. But there are countries that are more similar and mature markets, like England, you know, and I'm talking about Europe like a continent, not European Union. There are countries that are still developing countries. After the communism, they're still building what they need to be building. There are countries that were the superpowers centuries ago, like Spain, and they're not anymore. So it's very difficult to say, like, if Europe is as a continent heading to some direction all collectively. I think each of the country needs to do a little bit of their work and work on their regulations. And it's a competition. Like being in European Union is a competition. Ireland, you know, building their own like hub for tech companies, or the Eastern European countries building their own hub of different policies and not having euros and so on. I think it's very, very interesting, very, very diverse. And it's very difficult for me to say Europe needs to do this and that, because it's going to work for this country, but not the other one. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I totally agree that people need to start understanding what actually money is. And that's the hard part, because...
Yeah, what actually money is, what it does, how we use it, how the governments use it, and that CBDC is not more convenient just because somebody said so, but like literally show me the convenience. Show me, convince me. How is it going to be convenient for me? Not for you, but for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I get it. It's more convenient for you, but I want to see that.
Me as a citizen.
Exactly. Like sell me the product. And they haven't been able to do so. I hope, I'm very hopeful that lots of people actually in Europe have education. Not all the education is the same, but I would hope some of the people have actually like a good understanding of, you know, how this works, and that they would understand, that they would have the same point of view. There is no selling it to me, so I'm buying with my vote, and I'm not buying this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so hopefully we'll see how we can replicate. It's not, because I was just thinking that when I was studying engineering in the university, I actually learned about Bitcoin, but as you said, I learned it in the way of blockchain. So, you know, the way of how to process data, but not like Bitcoin per se in the Austrian economic way. So it's really interesting that actually even me, that I study a little bit of economics, but also friends that have studied economics or business administration, whatever, it's really interesting that everything that they learn is about how it works, Keynesian economics, but not the Austrian economics. So sometimes people don't realize that there are more types of economics, but that we live after 1971 in the Keynesian economic system, right? So it's it's like, wow.
Yeah, it's exactly that. So, you know, the schooling system or the educational system in everywhere is controlled by state, basically. So it's very, very difficult to get a different point of views on things that are not convenient for the faculty or something of a state university. So what you actually want to have is a free universities, private, that can actually build different points of views. And then you know, like you find your way to these universities and you realize like it opens completely different door. You're like, what's happening? Like, why I wasn't learning about this in school? Why I haven't, you know, realized this or that? So that's why these institutions are very important, and I want to be part of that. I also think, you know, lots of people in Europe have like they're falsely calm and relaxed because nothing really difficult is happening to them right now. But the alert is coming. I think lots of people will be realizing very soon, if they haven't in the past 5 years, that their quality of life is completely changing. And that, you know, I mean, it's probably most of the people are already realizing, especially the young generation, when they cannot afford to buy a house, or, you know, the rent is, you know, forever struggle, when they cannot find jobs in Spain, the unemployment is crazy in the young generation of people. Yeah. So I think people do start realizing. I think what is very important to build also something that you're building, like podcasts or independent media. We call you influencers, but I think it's more of independent
educators,
but even like reports, like what's happening. I think it needs to happen outside of the mainstream media very often, because otherwise it's not getting reported. And this is evolving so fast, the space of free media, that it's very difficult to grasp who to trust, who not to trust. So if you are building your channel, your voice in the space, it's very important for, you know, also the brands in the space to kind of lean on you and make sure that the information that there's crucial for the society is delivered, you know. And mainstream media will traditionally go for the sensation and fear, yeah, rather than for, you know, positive changes and, you know, opportunities. So I would say it's very important in Europe that the freedom of speech and the freedom of, you know, independent media, independent journalists and content creators to have the opportunity to make living out of it. So that this is my call for any like Bitcoin companies and brands. Understand that this is very important part of the ethos, very important part of the community, and support these content creators and independent journalists.
Yeah.
And understand that, you know, that actually can help form the society that we all want to have in the future. That understands different aspects and can freely discuss their ideas and discussions how to fix it. It's not going to be a government that is going to fix it at the end.
No. Actually, I also think that we need more academic papers about Bitcoin. You know, like the Satoshi, yeah, papers, the Bitcoin Policy Institute.
I have a couple of ideas in my drawer, but I still need some time to build this.
Yeah, we need more of those things. Yeah,
we do. Well, so anybody who is interested in, you know, the academic, I want to invite you to go to the university website. I'll share a link with you and participate in it. You know, offer yourself if you want to study, you know, apply for the study. But if you want to participate in any other way, we are basically essentially building an academic community around Bitcoin, and so we will be happy to get in touch.
All right. Christina, I will let you go because it's kind of late and we have made an hour of podcast.
I work globally, so there is no bedtime for me, basically.
Yeah, I know. I get you. In this space that we are 24/7, but still, yeah, we deserve to rest a little bit. But hopefully I will have you a second time in the podcast. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and anything if you want to add that probably I didn't ask, now's the time.
I think I said everything. Like, it was quite of a long conversation. Like, happy to be on your podcast, happy to share my thoughts and my experiences. So thanks for having me.
No, thanks to you. All right, guys, that will be it for today. But see you next week. So if you like it, you know what to do. Share it, subscribe to the channel. That helps a lot, always. And again, as usual, since we started season 5, this will be premiere on Oster. So see you in Oster first.